Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
I was kind of annoyed at the government's response when we were in Sedona and we met this German scientist, Richard and I, who was measuring energy spots from around the world. It was so interesting to meet him because, you know, here he was in Sedona and the government was still denying that there was anything about Sedona that was even interesting other than the rocks are red. Richard and I were laughing because I was just like, could you imagine Germany just flew a scientist halfway around the world for nothing to see here? Really? I doubt it. And the guy came with a schedule. Like, he knew when they were coming in. Like, there's actually a schedule, like a flight schedule, like, you know, American Airlines to Earth.
Meg Hansen, my guest, back again. So I'm going to throw some things at you before we get into this. We're going to talk about telepathy because people are interested at this point and encouraged that this is an okay thing to talk about. And not only that, that it isn't that hard to do. But first, I think it's a physics study that said that they were working with dream imagery. And people, when you're thinking about a thought, they had some pictures and they were able to reproduce using AI brain imagery, the pictures that people were looking at, meaning that they're like just a short step away from being able to interpret what people are seeing in their dreams. This is right up your alley. What do you think?
How fascinating is that for those of us who forget our dreams? It's very, very interesting to me. And of course, it shows you the power of AI. But also, it could come with some consequences, too. So I think there would be a good part to that and a not-so-great part to that. But I find it fascinating that that's possible. I would be curious to, like, meet somebody that has been part of that kind of a study.
Well, I think the studies are ongoing. I think this was just like the precursor saying that this is what we've done. The physics students from the Stevens Institute of Technology in New Jersey, they trained machine learning models to reconstruct visual images from recordings of a person's brainwaves. They were able to determine when a person was looking at an image of a pizza, a panda, or another category, and they could see what it was. See, that is, it's mind-blowing.
That's something that you would think came from extraterrestrials. That's just fascinating.
And that's when we were talking in the previous conversation. You were saying they are so fast. And you, who are extremely fluent in telepathy, then to say that it's too fast, this might be the bridge.
I don't know about that yet. You know, I think right now the only way is to ask them to slow down a little bit. I mean, I think we have to be careful how much we trust AI at this point. There's obviously nothing new about AI. It's what humans put into AI, and it combines all of our knowledge, but it doesn't always combine it correctly. And it doesn't, you know, so if you're in a negotiation, that has to be correct. So if you're negotiating with extraterrestrials, you can't make a mistake because it could cost all of us all of our lives if you did. So depending on the mistake, I don't think AI is to the point yet, or even in the foreseeable future, maybe a little bit from now, but I don't think we're at the point yet where we could trust it. The thought that it could be used without a human being able to kind of have a grasp on where it's going because it's so fast. You know, in a negotiation, I think we're kind of far from that. I think, unfortunately, we're still the slow humans. So,
yeah. Well, and the other thing that I also threw in there was the conversation they were able to have with a whale named Twain. For 20 minutes, they had an AI-assisted conversation that helped them bridge the gap because whale language is not human language. It's sounds and tones and frequencies. And so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's another aspect with this. But real quick, to address the concern, this is most recent. I think it was a speech given by the co-founder of Anthropic. He said that they don't even know. It's where it's going. The potential for me, it's terrifying, but at the same time, it's like you can't look away because this thing is going so fast and we're the ones who created it, but we are not the ones who, in the end result, control it. It does its own thing. And that's what they're still trying to figure out. Why, how, what will it do? They don't have those answers. And that is from one of the co-founders of Anthropic. The others are all speaking similar things, that it's doing weird things that they hadn't even thought about. And so we're learning as it's growing. And as it's growing, in other words, exponentially fast, we're kind of, I don't know if we're ahead of it anymore. We're behind it as we have given it all these tools and all these ways to think and frame and have some kind of autonomous behavior inside of it. It's going to surprise us, I think. And that's, but the AI, I wanted to bring that in with your the conversations that you have had with ET and ask you, are you able to discern what the motive is between that species, that entity, and collaborating with humans? Can you speak to that?
I'm not sure I understand what you're asking.
What is their purpose? What do they want from us?
Okay, well, that would be part of the negotiation, and that's not something I can discuss. But no, we understand. It's not a question of understanding them. It's a question of communicating fast enough and being on the same page as the people that would be technically in charge of the negotiation. And you really have to believe that you're on the same page, just like I said in the last interview, because they're reading your thoughts faster than they come into your head. So you don't have a chance to kind of go, oh, I didn't mean to think that, you know, in a meeting room at a corporation, you'd be like, you just wouldn't say what you're thinking. That, you know, if you think the person across from you is an idiot, you're not going to say that. You're just going to kind of just keep going. But in a negotiation that involves telepathy, they're reading your thoughts. They're reading your, you know, any visuals, any colors, anything that's in your mind at all. Even if you think about what you had for dinner last night, you know, because you're bored at some point or what have you, they're going to pick up every single thing, including intent, including the good, the bad, the ugly, and the negotiation. So you have to remain focused. You have to be one of those people that can remain focused, have excellent concentration, and you have to be extremely fast, and you can't miss anything is the problem. If you were going to do a government negotiation with, if you're just messing around and you want to play with telepathy, that's simple. I can give everybody some exercises that you can start developing your telepathic skills. That's super, super easy. But if you're going to be doing a negotiation where everybody on Earth's life is at stake, you have to make sure you get that one right. You'll have to ask them to slow down in order to, because humans are simply not fast enough with telepathy at this point in order to negotiate as fast as the other side. And they've probably perfected it. I think they're probably a gazillion years ahead of us. If it's true all time is simultaneous, then maybe there's a way we can catch up. If someone tells me, I would love. But I'm also suffering on the how to be in three places at one time, if anyone can help me out there.
Well, you know, you might as well ask. It doesn't hurt.
You know, I have this list of like, geez, if I could only do this and this and this and all at once. I think telepathy, as I said before, is something everyone should learn. I think they should not turn it off in kids in school. I think everybody should learn telepathy. Everybody. And yeah. Also, I think everyone has used telepathy, but it's not developed in people the way it should be. I mean, because think of it, you think of a person, right? And then they call a half an hour later. Okay, that was telepathy. You focused on somebody and they called you or they emailed you. And I mean, that's something you can develop too. You can, you know, think of somebody you haven't, you know, talked to in a while and see how long it takes them to call. The other thing that's really easy to do, you can send, you know, to one of your friends. I mean, use something simple. Use playing cards or simple shapes or like the color blue or something to start with. And, you know, just send it, focus on that and send it to your friend and see if they can pick up on anything that you were thinking of, like the color or the, but focus intently on the one thing. Don't make it complex at first. And the other thing is you could have a partner concentrate on an image and see if you can pick that up, if you can receive that, or a color, or, you know, a short phrase or something like that. Nothing too complicated at first. Image sending, same thing, you know, visualize something like an apple, something everybody knows what it is. And before you do that, just make sure that you breathe a little bit. So when you breathe, you have to do a nice deep breath in order to put yourself in a state to do telepathy. So really easy, just breathe in 2, 3, 4, 5, and breathe out 2, 3, 4, 5. And then breathe in 2, 3, 4, 5, and breathe out 2, 3, 4, 5. And that, you'll feel the difference and you'll start to relax. And then if you would just focus on an object, it can be people like a candle flame. You can, but honestly, it could be a picture on the wall. It could be a dot on the wall, until you just feel yourself in an altered state, in a daydream state. It's very easy to do. Anybody can do it.
Okay. I want to know who's thinking about pineapples, because, you know, we're doing this as we're talking. Somebody's picking up on pineapples, and I'm wondering, okay, where'd that come from? In other words, out of the blue, when you get images, when you get little things like that, sometimes it's actually somebody in your circle or somewhere around you. I've done that at work, you know, around people, and just didn't even realize it until we talk. And then all of a sudden, a similar thing comes up and it's like, oh, that's where it came from.
And you should pay attention when you're going through especially crowded places. Like, are there thoughts in your head that aren't yours? Oh, and the other thing I saw on, I think it was the New York Post, within the last couple of days, it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen, that some guy was claiming that he was being forced to have telepathic communication with extraterrestrials. He was just chained to them or something. So there's a way out of that. If you feel like someone has strings to you and they're trying to communicate with you telepathically and you don't wish to have that happen, you can just see that dissolve. And if that doesn't, like a rainbow in the sky, if that doesn't work, just see yourself with a pair of scissors and just cut them, like cut those strings or whatever they are. There's no reason to just, you know, play victim and be like, oh, poor me, poor me, poor me. I mean, when I wake up every morning, I do a psychic shield with, you know, the universal white light. It's in all of my meditations. So anything is in the meditations online, in the Metaphysical Ireland and the Metaphysical New York meditations.
Yeah, and those are available on YouTube. So easy access.
Yeah, it's easy access, but I do that every morning. And I actually go a step further. You can draw down the white light from the stars and surround yourself with an envelope, your entire body, and then see a rainbow coming up and swirling around you from the earth. And I use the earth in Ireland. I visualize Giant's Causeway, but you can pick wherever you know, whatever spot you feel drawn to.
And you also said you can project yourself to a place, you know, to a power spot and see yourself in that space as you meditate.
You can. And I would just say that that's more exciting than, you know, visualizing your living room, but maybe not. I mean, it just depends on what your living room is.
By the ocean, in front of the sea. Yes. Okay. My imaginary living room. I've got it. Well, okay. So yeah. Your website, metaphysicalnewyork.com. And when you have the locations, the audio locations for these, it's there are links there. They're all to Apple, Amazon, YouTube, Spotify. So it's available for anybody. But when you're doing the meditation, the easy thing to set up for this is what do you want to achieve? What's your intention that you set ahead of time? People think it's difficult to get into the mood, and it's like, no, you just sit down and go, and that's it. It's not difficult.
Yeah, no, it's not difficult at all. There's many ways into this. I mean, one of the easiest ways to really to attune to another frequency is to spend time in environments with strong natural electromagnetic or geomagnetic presence. So that's going to be near running water, at megalithic sites, in a forest. Even Ingo said that to me, that it's easier to connect because with your electromagnetic field interfacing with another strong electromagnetic field, it does seem to be true that it is easier to do automatic grading. And especially if you really want to get something, use your non-dominant hand when you're like, if you're at a megalithic site and you use your non-dominant hand to do automatic grading, you'll see you'll get some very interesting insight. Like psychometry to me was always a good kind of a bridge to telepathy, because when you're touching a stone, or you can use somebody else's jewelry and just read them and see what you get. That's, you know, a step before communication. There's all sorts of ways in. There's, you know, if you think about the protocol, the remote viewing protocol, it's in there as well. The sensory, I'm trying to think of what Ingo called it. It's sensory impressions. That's what he called it. So another way in is to doing telepathy is if you're great at remote viewing, you'll know that, you know, the remote viewing protocol, there's stage one and stage two. So if you're practicing stage one with the ideogram and stage two with the sensory impressions, that's training the signal line. That is actually, the sensory impressions are telepathy. So if you're actually using the CRV manual, the protocol for remote viewing that Ingo wrote, that's in there, sensory impressions, but that is telepathy. So again, there's different ways in here. But if you are just starting out, I would keep a journal of the impressions you get, you know, each morning before you wake up. Just record any images, symbols, forms, emotions, anything from dream states, anything. And then throughout the day, think about anything that you receive from other people, or that they've received from you, or, you know, you heard from that person that you were thinking about this morning, or whatever it is, just to give yourself some confidence. Sending somebody a symbol is also, that's one of the things we always did in Sedona, was we'd send the group a symbol, and it was just stunning how many people in the room, nearly the entire room, would get the symbol. And statistically, that's impossible. That's, you know, crazy. If you think about it, it speaks to the connection of our minds, and especially the connection of minds in a group setting.
That's the thing, a group setting, it amplifies it. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
Jack Houck did the demonstrations with the spoon bending, and he had these big groups, and the whole point was to get the group energy excited. I watched one of his presentations, and it's available on the internet, and one of the presentations, he had a woman come up. She said, well, I can't. He says, no, get that word out of your vocabulary, because as soon as you say that, then that's what happens. So do not ever say the word can't.
The word can't, like, you know, we always use the Henry Ford quote, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And that applies to every psychic skill around.
Yeah. So the developing that energy in the group, he amplified, got him excited, got him enthusiastic. And he said, anytime anybody gets a successful spoon bending here, then stand up and yell, I got it, or stand up and yell, you know, cheer, whatever. You're continuing to energize everybody in the group with your animated responses. I thought that was a really interesting way to present it. It doesn't have to happen that way all the time, but that was one way to say that the group energy is also a participant in whatever engagement you're doing.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's important, the group energy, and I think it's important that you realize that it's not just the group that you're in at that moment.
Okay. You have to explain that.
Well, if you're on the Metro North train or the subway on the way to the city, that's a group, right? That group of people is thinking, probably not about you, but about whatever's going on in their life. You can receive some of their thoughts. So again, like every group, and Seth goes into this, the nature of mass events. That book is absolutely fascinating on how we as groups create mass events. I was a big fan of the Jane Roberts book, Seth. In fact, that was my first introduction to metaphysics in 1996. My boss at Geffen Records, when my sister died, my boss at Geffen Records told me to, go to the Bodhi Tree bookstore and go get a Seth book. And so I did. I went around the corner to the Bodhi Tree and I bought a couple Seth books. And I read them, And the second time I went back to the store, I met Dick Sutkin. That all worked out. And so we became really good friends for 25 years until he passed away. So, but that was my introduction was the Seth books and how we do create ourselves mm-hmm. and with groups.
Yeah.
And also it covers telepathy. It covers psychic development, but you have to read it. You know, people buy Seth books and they sit on the shelf. That's not going to help you. But what will help you is if you actually read the books. They're very, very good books.
So you create your reality. That's an easy one to start with.
I'd say just Seth Speaks is easy to read. Or Seth Material, Nature Personal Reality is a lot of people's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I did my college entrance exam on the college entrance essay on individual and nature of mass events. I found that so fascinating about how we all create together, but that's any group you're in. Groups are all connected, you know, and my dad used to say, and he was not into metaphysics at all. Of course, he worked for the Catholic Church, but he used to say that you are the sum of those six people who you're standing closest to. So he's like, just be careful where you stand.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. So going back there, we didn't talk about this, but you said as a kid, there was a UFO. And your dad was involved in this. And what was his reaction? That's a great story. Can you share that?
I grew up in a place called Putnam Valley, New York. And Putnam Valley is famous for their UFOs in the 80s. So I was in Putnam Valley in the 80s. I was very young, you know, when the famous UFO landed that everyone saw. But we did have an incident that was near my backyard. And still my dad was like, it's not one of those, you know, it's not, you know, this isn't real. And he said that about the famous UFO, that, you know, it's not real because, and it's not that he was the type of person to just deny things, but I think that was so beyond anything, a concept that somebody who is so planted on this earth, you know, here's a man who has three kids, has an MBA in finance, has a nice house in a nice neighborhood in a suburb of New York. And, you know, he clicked all the boxes, but it was unimaginable to him to have, you know, aliens from another planet land a craft almost in the backyard. You know, that was just beyond reason. And so I think since he didn't know what to make of it, he just tried to tell us kids, like, okay, that was just somebody's imagination. Clearly it was in all the newspapers. It was a big deal. If you research it now, you'll see Putnam Valley, New York did have a little issue with UFOs for a little while there. To me, it's different people have different reactions. But I'm still like that little girl that was in Putnam Valley when that happened. And my parents were just, you know, they're probably just scared to death of it. But for me, I was curious. And I've always been curious. Like, I've never lost that curiosity as to what is that and how can we help them? Like, I mean, I don't assume that everyone is bad. I assume people are nice until they prove otherwise. So, any beings, whether that's a dog or a person or someone from another planet, I just assume everybody is very kind until, you know, there's a reason not to believe that. And so I was always curious about them. And I was kind of annoyed at the government's response when we were in Sedona and we met this German scientist, Richard and I, who was measuring energy spots from around the world. It was so interesting to meet him because, you know, here he was in Sedona and the government was still denying that there was anything about Sedona that was even interesting. Other than the rocks are red. And Richard and I were laughing because I was just like, could you imagine Germany just flew a scientist halfway around the world for nothing to see here? Really? I doubt it. And the guy came with a schedule. Like he knew when they were coming in, like there's actually a schedule, like a flight schedule, like, you know, American Airlines to Earth. It was just fascinating to me, but I've always had this curiosity. You know, I've never really taken a big interest in UFOs, but I've always been curious. I'm kind of like, oh, well, you know, and that's why when Richard and Ingo are doing all sorts of experimental techniques and communication, what have you. I was always interested. I was always happy to assist. I was always, if I was the only one standing around, I was like curious, not curious enough to really take up a real interest in UFOs. They just never, you know, but I'm a very curious person. That is definitely something to be curious about.
Okay, how do you reconcile the non-interest in UFOs and then the conversations with ET?
Well, I separate that there are beings on other planets that are not Earth, okay? And they're travel mechanisms. Like, if you're on Earth, I don't care what kind of car you have or even if you have one. But I'm more curious about the ETs who are on other planets or maybe just other frequencies on our planet. And I'd like to enhance communication with them, but I don't have a, like an interest in their craft, like their version of our airplane, which is far more advanced than anything we have, clearly. But I never took an interest in the craft. I always just took an interest in the communication and how do we communicate with them? Like if you were to change frequencies, change dimensions, and there's easier times to do that. You can do that, especially in liminal periods. And if you're near a megalith at a liminal period, that's the easiest time to get downloads. That's the easiest time to communicate. For me, it's the telepathic communication that's most interesting and developing that. And although, you know, Ingo and Richard said I was very fast, again, I'm telling you, I'm not compared to the extraterrestrials. I'm not even close. But I always like to develop that. I think it's the most important thing, no matter who comes, whether they land in a craft or just come from another or are communicating from another dimension here on Earth. That we have to be able to communicate with them, especially if in the future we're going to be sharing more space with them. Like, we're going to have to be able to talk to them. So, you know, I think the communication is far more important to me personally and of interest to me personally more than their crafts.
Ingo Swann was also into astrology. And there's yes. another thing about doing any kind of remote viewing work that or telepathy, that sidereal time, I don't know how to pronounce, is that right?
Yeah.
Sidereal time.
Uh-huh.
It's also more opportunistic for you to
it is.
Figure
on
that out.
On liminal days, if you're, again, near running water, in a forest, near, I would bet you if you did kind of a survey of when the UFOs or UAPs, whatever you want to call them, come to Earth, I will bet you that there's a higher occurrence during liminal periods and there's a higher occurrence in like forests near running water because of the heightened, the fields, mm-hmm. the electromagnetic fields would be, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know how to properly describe it, but I would bet that there's going to be higher occurrences around the liminal times in places like megaliths and, you know, near brooks, streams, rivers, oceans. I saw one go straight into the water by Kinbane Head. I mean, that was the most fascinating thing.
Where was that at?
Northern Ireland. It was quite an entertaining experience because what was interesting to me was like hours before this tic-tac thing came, hours before the tic-tac came down, the water started turning counterclockwise. It was really interesting. It was like, it went for hours and it just, the water in a particular spot was just turning counterclockwise. I even took a picture of it and sent it to my friend who worked at Monroe Institute. I was like, check this out. This is interesting. Like, why is the water in this one spot just going? And then that night, cause I was camping up there because I love that spot. I just, the sunrise in the morning was just gorgeous between Ireland and Scotland. So in the middle of the night, this TikTok came down just right almost at that spot where the water was gone. And it went straight into the water. And somebody else, this was really funny, somebody actually called 999, which is the emergency services number. I was like, I'm not so sure they need our help.
Yeah, they're drowning. Go get them. Wow. Well, but at least they reported it, you know, and there was a record, a note. Something happened.
No, I think they thought it was a plane crash, to be honest, or something like that. But I don't know what they thought or what the report was, but I just thought it was, I was just like, really? Like, they're down there with rescue boats and rafts and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, no, they probably don't care for us to come save them.
No. Wow. Okay, so it looked like a Tic Tac then.
Yes, it was a Tic Tac that flies and goes underwater.
Okay.
Apparently.
The USO, unidentified submersible object.
I don't know what it's called, but it was actually kind of cool to see it.
I would think. I mean, yeah. Okay, so how many UFOs have
That's
you seen?
That's the only one of those I've ever seen.
Okay, that was my
But like, that went into the water.
Okay, okay.
Like, I saw two Tic Tacs go to Newgrange one time, and they, just like Sedona, there's that spot where they disappear, where the frequency changes, and they just disappear. A human can't see them. So the same at Newgrange, like two of them came in and they just disappear in a specific spot. It was the weirdest thing.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
So, similar to Sedona, have you seen UFOs in Sedona?
Yeah, well, I saw the one with Ingo and Richard. We were trying to communicate with it. We had some success, but they were, it was tones that they were sending back. So what I'd love to know about the AI thing that can get images from your dreams, I wonder if they can get tones, because, you know, it's not easy to, unless you just write down the notes immediately. And I happen to be a music major in college for a while, so I actually was able to write down the notes. But and they weren't, the way the tones came through, it wasn't based on our Western music scale. It was more like if you listen to ancient African tonal music type of thing. So it was interesting, but I had heard it before because, of course, I went to music school for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, Ingo didn't know really, and Richard were just really excited about it. They just, it was very interesting to be there with them.
Oh, I would think, yeah. Well,
but,
okay, so if the whale, because that's the most, to me, that's the most complimentary, the whatever AI is being used to communicate with whales, that might be able to resolve the tone difference.
I don't know, but I hope so. That would be great. Wouldn't it be great if we can talk to dolphins and whales?
Yes. Yes. I can't imagine what that would be like, but that would be, that's why this is so exciting, because the many uses that AI has that don't involve destroying the world. Okay. So that's, everybody's all excited about it's going to kill us. And it's like, would you please just back up a little bit? Stop fear mongering. People want to weaponize it. Okay, well, that's not the direction that's going to carry us forward in terms of any longevity. So if we can step back from wanting to destroy the planet and carrying all those thoughts forward, then come back and say, how can we enhance? How can we improve? How can we optimize the advantages that we have right now with AI?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's too many people that seem to be on some kind of a mission to destroy anything that they think they don't like. You know, it's the weirdest thing now.
Maybe, you know, I mean, that, I think, again, going back in history, when Copernicus, I mean, there's a fear that comes with the unknown, fear with anything that says this isn't the status quo and we don't want change. So as soon as something novel comes in, that's going to force us to reevaluate how we conceive, perceive, understand reality. And then all of a sudden it's like a fear comes in of, well, you might not be able to create what I want you to create. So there's control. So fear, control, and Dick Sutphin was into this. He was really good at identifying people getting caught up into that kind of behavior. That's what I liked about his work. I was present for one of these events where I watched somebody manipulate an audience, and my mom's right beside me going along with the program, and I'm like, how can you allow this? How can you let yourself be led into this mantra, this mind-numbing scenario for someone else's benefit? Because all they wanted to do was get you to sign up and pay money to this course. I'm like, good grief. I watched an entire room of people. Not all of them went into it, but they were caught up in the moment, in the drama, in the music, in the hypnotized. And Dick, he spells that out with a lot of his stuff, is that this is so easy and it's being done now. An example is the politics that you see, or in any kind of rah-rah group in terms of trying to get you to sign up for a program of any kind. These are manipulation tools that are extremely effective. I wanted you to address that too with your hypnosis.
Yeah, he wrote an essay, or I'm sorry, it was actually a speech that he gave, and it's called The Battle for Your Mind. And that explains the manipulation and the way, you know, hypnosis can be used to manipulate people too, you know, and unfortunately there are, like any field, you know, there's good accountants and there's terrible accountants, and there's, you know, good people in every field, and then there's bad people. But with hypnosis, it's the same. There's really good hypnotists, and then there's really people who should not be practicing anything that has to do with anybody's mind.
One thing you explained before was that people could be influenced without knowing to do something.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not that difficult. And you played a trick on somebody, we won't mention the name, as a demonstration to say, this is what you're not expecting.
That is generally kind of mostly reserved for people where someone would really want something that's really worth something. So most people, I think, aren't going to fall into that issue. However, most people can fall for the manipulation, you know, to buy this program or
invest in property that doesn't exist,
vote for this crappy politician. You know, we've seen some really amazing, horrible uses of Hitler-like propaganda techniques on the public in America.
That work. Very effective. Yeah, they've been tried and true.
They are extremely effective. They work in Germany and they work here, unfortunately. And some people think that's funny, and I don't. I think that there's a responsibility that comes with using these techniques, but there is a responsibility to be ethical, and that is not ethical.
When you educate people and say, this is what's possible, this is how it's done, and pay attention when you're in a group, or pay attention when you're watching a video, or when you're watching TV. I actually saw, watching television, a program on Netflix that had subliminal cueing in it. And it's a word that flashes on the screen. It's called a subliminal flash. And basically, it's like a tenth of a second or a tenth of a frame. I can't remember which. And what was happening was I was doing two or three things at once. I was multitasking and I was looking up at the screen. And so as I'm either playing solitaire or mahjong or something, then I look up at the screen and I saw this word and I'm like, what? What? And so then I went back to see if I could see it again. I can only see it if I'm not paying attention. Okay. And so it's like that little, the psych thing they do with the gorilla passing through. Did you see the gorilla? Misdirection, but it's there. And so if it's there, it's everywhere. They did studies with this, I think, with the imagery, you know, during the movies, if they would play some little thing and would you buy popcorn. That to me is extremely invasive, and you don't really know what you're seeing.
You turn on your television, because two-thirds of the time you watch TV, you're in an altered state.
They call it the boob tube for a reason.
That's why when people say, oh, there's nobody who can hypnotize me, and I can't, I'm like, have you turned on a television ever? Because everyone can be hypnotized. Everyone.
You get into a zone. And the only reason I could see that was because I wasn't fully tuned in. I was in that altered state of in between of paying attention to multiple things and not really paying attention at all, getting that numb, you know, of, okay, here, and letting my mind
wander. And Wendy, that's everyone. Mm-hmm. That is everyone. When I did a workshop in Cork for mind-body experience, it was a psychic archaeology workshop. I was going through a remote viewing exercise. But before I start any of that, I asked everybody in the room, I said, okay, has everyone been in here at this event for more than 45 minutes? And everyone said yes. Everyone in the room has been in the event. They've been downstairs to the exhibit hall. They've walked around the exhibit hall, and they've been here for at least 45 minutes. I said, okay, what color is the carpet downstairs in the exhibit hall? Not one person could tell me. Okay? Mm-hmm. That is the way people are now. Right now, that this is the reality around the world, is that people aren't paying attention.
It's overstimulation. I mean, yeah, for me, it's overstimulation. There are too many things to focus on. And so you're going from point A to point B. My mind can only retain so much information, because then you're going to crash if you try to pay attention to every single thing. That I think is intentional in some respects, because then when you do have to pay attention, you've tuned out some things that might have been important.
Yeah. And it is, it's overstimulation, and people are just, but you can't assume that you can develop your intuitive abilities and develop psychically if you're not going to pay attention. So one of the first exercises I give everybody is to pay attention, like and not only with visuals, but to listen. When you walk out your door, listen to the bird song, feel the wind, smell the fresh air. When you walk back inside, how does that room feel? What color is the wall? How are the chairs arranged? What kind of table is that? What kind of wood? Is there a tablecloth? Is there, when you walk into your kitchen, what's the kitchen floor look like? What about the curtains? How does the tablecloth feel? How about the towels? Is it clean? Is it, you know, can you smell, you know, breakfast, your favorite breakfast? You know, you have to open people's senses in order to develop them psychically, to expand, because it's not only your sixth sense, you're expanding all of your senses.
Yeah.
Perception is all of your senses.
One of the triggers for my mind shift when I've had other entities in my space was all of a sudden my senses became stronger. Smells. It was like, oh my gosh, I'm smelling all this stuff. And ozone, of course, that goes with it. Feeling a sensation of being at a higher altitude. That was, wow. But I didn't move. I didn't do anything except everything around me changed and my perception changed. The hearing, which I have one issue with hearing, and it was not, I didn't register that. So these are things that when you notice those kinds of shifts in your environment, or I've also felt vibrations change.
Yeah.
And then seen some, oh, here's the latest one. This was just a day or two ago. I'm playing dominoes at the dining room table with my husband. We're playing dominoes. It's, you know, it's a Memorial Day weekend. So I all of a sudden have this ocular migraine thing happen. And I don't know if that's what they're still calling it, but it's when this geometric design appears in your eye and it'll last about 20 to 30 minutes, textbook, and no other problems. It's just something that is a part of me. Okay. So usually it happens and it's half a half circle. This time I'm seeing it, but then I'm seeing this little circle with the same designs, the geometric designs. It's in a circle. And when I move my head, that circle stays right there. That's not how this thing works. When you have that, it's in your brain, it's in your mind, it's in your head. It should be moving with you. This was the circle that I identified. So he said, tell me where it is. He got up and he put his hand there and he felt tingles in his hand in that circle. And it was on the door frame.
Wow.
And when he touched it, then it moved. It had not moved at all. But once he contacted it, then it moved. So then the next day, as I'm trying to write this down and share it and get AI to give me a better way to actually relate it than I'm doing right now. so then as I did that, for a brief second, a moment, right above my head, like right above my forehead to the right, I saw this, what appeared to be a snowflake, a lace doily type thing right above my head, about 4 inches in diameter. For a brief moment, I'm like, oh my, but before that I felt a vibration, a frequency, a vibration of some kind in my body. I'm like, what the heck? And then that's there. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what, you know, what is interacting with me? Because now I'm seeing it visually without any extra kind of stimulant or weird eye thing. And those kinds of things, though, when you're aware that it isn't just you and you don't have a health issue, that you're changing your perception and you're opening up windows to parts of reality we don't normally engage with. And to me, that's fascinating.
Yeah. And some people will develop it really very well and very quickly. And other people require a lot more practice. What I tell everyone is practice. And it's an everyday thing, like pay attention and practice.
And then to understand that we're not all going to have the same language. Because if I say what I, you know, a lace doily thing, it was like a snowflake and it's all, you know, it's other people might call it an orb because it was bright white. And so that's where it's complicated, because in different cultures, they talk about different beings that we might experience as a similar being, but have a different word for. And this is where it's still really complicated when you get into these exotic experiences, paranormal, or you know, whatever word you attach to that, liminal, you're in a liminal state, you're having it might not be paranormal, it might be a different kind of label, and divinity, you know, divine, angelic, it all comes into play. And it depends on which way you want to go with it in your own personal life. I'm viewing it as a positive, because it's always been positive for me. I've got nightlights that have been interactive for 30 years, well, 29. Anyway, that entity has been with me. And before that, there were others. But this is my own view of how I relate to the world. And it's a positive world. It's a world that has my back if I need it to, you know. And that really makes a difference on the kind of experiences, I believe, that you engage with or that come to you. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. No, it does.
And I was so curious about your experiences with the paranormal and the things around you, because you have that same kind of attitude of it's beneficent, it's positive, it's, you know, the world is a beautiful space, and a most likely for most of us, an empowering and a receptive, reciprocal. You get what you put out.
Yeah, well, you have to figure that these are our neighbors. Everyone, you know, just because they're in another dimension or they're on another planet or whatever the story is, they're, you know, they might be here as well. Many of them are. But I just feel like communication is so important. It's so important. And you can't assume everyone's bad. You have to, just like you wouldn't assume your next door neighbor is a bad person before you meet them. You should assume that they're a great person and until they're not, you know. I mean, I don't know that I want to be enemies with a race of beings that is a gazillion years ahead of where we are. I mean, I don't think picking a fight with them is really the best way forward. So, I mean, so being really negative and saying, oh, they're, you know, they're just going to kill us and this and that, that's ridiculous, first of all. But the move is ours at this point. And I don't think we should make a bad move, because I think that could cost us a lot.
Going back to telepathy, you teach telepathy, and how long, I mean, how many classes, what can somebody expect?
Oh, it's just part of the intuitive development seminar. So it's about 15 to 18 hours, about 15 hours for the first part. And then there's the advanced part. So telepathy runs through the program just like, you know, we start with automatic writing, which will include some telepathy exercises, and we go to past life regression. But while we're going, we send symbols and we read our neighbor. We do different exercises with our chakras, and then we go through to remote viewing, very basic. But it's, and psychometry, and it's just basically step by step by step. But the reason I start with automatic reading is really everybody gets something, and it's so that you gain some confidence in your psychic skills. Because once you get, you know, if you start with remote viewing, you'll get some people who just have beginner's luck. It just won't really feel, it'll just totally feel all made up to them if you start with the remote viewing. If you start with the past life regression and the automatic writing, people feel like they've gained some confidence in their abilities. And by the time you get 5 days later or 3 days later, depending on how long the seminar is, on Zoom, I do shorter sessions for more days because I think that doing like the 3 day psychic seminar that we did in Sedona, I feel like doing that like 8 hours a day on Zoom is just too much for people. And you shouldn't really be staring at your computer that long anyway.
Yeah.
So what I do is I break it up. So it'll be like 2 to 3 hours once or twice a week until we exhaust the seminar. I just think it's easier for people to learn and when you're doing it in an online environment in, you know, 2 to 3 hour sessions.
I agree. I've taken sessions, you know, that there's only so much your mind can handle at one point. And then there's also the dog that has to go outside or something like that. That would be disruptive.
Yeah. And there, you know, and then you're going to run into, no matter what time zone, somebody's got to eat dinner. Somebody's got to eat lunch, you know, whereas everyone can spare everything for 2 to 3 hours, you know, but beyond that, people need to start doing things and going places and stuff like that. And they're not paying attention to what's at hand. They're paying attention because you're not in a room with a group. When you're in the physical room, it's easy to get through 8 hours with breaks because the group plays off each other. So it actually works out quite nicely, but it doesn't work out 8 hours online. I don't think it works for some people who can really command attention. Jean Houston did one in, I don't know, 2022 or 2023 that was online, and it was 8 hours a day for 4 days straight. But and she can get away with that because the woman, you know, could command everyone's attention and everybody just loves every word she says. But it's unusual for people to be able to pull that off.
Okay, so metaphysicalnewyork.com website. And then the next book, Sedona, I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, that book is coming probably in August now. So I'm working on that now. It's called The Psychic Archaeology in Sedona, The Wisdom of an Open Heart.
Okay. All right. And the book's available now, the one with all of the stone caverns, they're stone what?
Stone chambers.
Okay.
But the Native Americans I've spoken to call them caves. And of course, in Ireland, they're called passage tombs. So, you know, everyone has a name for them, but, you know, they're stone structures. And the book is called Psychic Archaeology in New York, The Timeless Resonance of New York's Stone Chambers.
Thank you. The telepathy thing right now, people are more encouraged that this is useful, it's helpful, and it's a way forward with your life. You can use it so many different ways that are helpful. And sometimes people are doing it and they realize, oh, that's what I was doing. I didn't think about it. Like when the phone rings, that's it. And you know who it is. Yeah, that's that
and
easy.
And one thing people don't think about, and I just want to say this because while we're still missing Nancy Guthrie in Arizona, people need to realize that they have telepathy abilities. So she was really actually easy to read at first. You know, I'm not going to say anything about that sheriff, but she was very easy to read at first. So she showed me where she was. She showed the staircase. She showed that she was in a building that was not a house at first. She was, but she actually, like, if you get kidnapped or you're in trouble or you need somebody to find you, make sure you focus on everything around you, like, and intently, so that you're giving details to people at the FBI who have the ability to use telepathy, who have the ability to read people. They used to have a psychic. I don't know if they still do after, you know, Elon Musk fired everybody in the government. Those people may not exist anymore, but they used to. And I just feel like if you spend some time developing your telepathy abilities, you'll also realize that it could save your life at some point. Like if you were ever to get into trouble and had to show where you are, read the street sign and focus on it. Read the name of the building, focus on it. Read the color of the car, the what the guy looks like. You just focus. Don't be the person that is just completely overwhelmed and out to lunch, focus on focusing on what's around you so that if someone is trying to read you, they'll pick up information about where you might be.
Yeah. You can do that with pets that are lost.
The easiest way to find pets or people is map dowsing, which I will cover in the advanced section of the seminar. But yeah, that is remote viewing, telepathy, and map dowsing combined together.
One-stop shopping.
That's it. The reason I teach the whole thing together in intuitive development, and I don't have like a separate class for telepathy and a separate class for past life regression, is because honestly, once everyone goes through the whole program, they pick which area they want to be great at. Some people only want to do automatic writing. Some people only want to do past life regressions. Some people only want to do psychometry. But in order to understand all of these different abilities, you have to experience them at least once. And just understand that those are options for you. You know, that you can develop. Most people do have to develop their psychic skills. Most people. Some people are, it's just like playing the piano, like I said. You know, you might have been born with this innate talent to play the piano, and you can, or one of those few people who can sit down, and apparently you were Mozart in your last life, and you sit down and you can play amazingly. But most of us start the piano with Mary Had a Little Lamb. And we develop from there. And most people can get reasonably good at the piano, and that's the same as every psychic skill, is you can get good with practice. And you can get better and better and better with practice. And then there's some people that will go to be amazing.
And like you.
Oh, I don't even consider myself amazing. I'm just grateful for the people who have told me I am.
Yes. And I'm thinking.
It helps your confidence to hear it. But
I'm just thinking, okay, I'm not fast enough to deal with the aliens, but I'm super, super, super fast compared to other humans. Well, that's a really neat trick, and that's a neat asset to have, you know? Okay, so I would say that you're probably pretty phenomenal, and I really don't want to know what you know about me, okay?
Oh, I was driving CJ crazy, I think. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, I was just talking out there talking to the fairies, and they said the last guy that you had in this house.
Like, oh.
Yeah. She's like, Meg?
Yes, TMI. TMI.
She's okay. Like, yeah, the fairies were right, but.
Just a little warning there, all right? Okay. Meg knows about you before you even say anything, just so you know.
It's all right, you know. But again, most people don't have to worry because, like, your average American citizen is not going to be of such importance to anybody who would want to read their mind or do whatever. But people who are of political persuasion or what have you, that where another government or somebody might want something from them, I would keep my eye out for this type of work because people can get more information than you might think they can, and they might be able to play tricks on you that you are not aware even exist.
Well, more information on you, metaphysicalnewyork.com is a website, and YouTube, that's where I find your videos, and the videos you have there are short and sweet. You don't have to, you know, it's not a 3 or 4 hour excursion. It's just long enough to help you shift your mind and become a little bit more, I think, open and grounded.
And the audios are on all the digital music services. They're on Apple, they're on iTunes, they're on Amazon, they're on 200 different services. So they're probably not on all of them, but they're on every major one that I can think of. So yeah. Spotify, everything.
Easy access. Well, thank you. I appreciate your time. And you know, we'll talk again. But right now, I just wanted to give people an update and a way to start practicing, start using, start accessing their own telepathic abilities. Because it's something, it's normal. And the more we use it, the better we have the ability to kind of discern what around us is important. Maybe not the color of the carpet. All right.
Well, the part of getting to the point where you can discern what's around you is to notice the color of the carpet and what's on the walls and how it feels to walk in each room. Just noticing throughout your day, noticing from all of your senses, what you smell, what you hear, what you see, what you feel, your overall perception. Using all of your senses is what is going to help you develop your psychic abilities.
Meg Hansen. Meg's next book is Psychic Archaeology in Sedona. Her website, metaphysicalnewyork.com.
And that's the same as every psychic skill, is you can get good with practice and you can get better and better and better with practice. And then there's some people that will go to be amazing.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.